I'm Matthew Smith, Vermont Edition producer, and I wanted to let you know that the podcast you're about to listen to has been edited for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening and enjoy.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. There's a very small, well-defined area in Vermont where slate is found in abundance. Krista Roop is the executive director of the Slate Valley Museum in Granville, New York.
The Slate Valley is kind of within the stone valley of the granite and the marble. It goes from about Castleton, Vermont, down to Salem, New York. And then there's about a 7-mile strip across that it straddles the border of New York and Vermont perfectly.
So in Vermont, that's Paulett, Wells, Pulteney, Fairhaven, and Castleton. Slate is an important stone, one of the three state stones, in fact, and although it's only found in this one sliver of the state, Vermont remains the largest producer of slate in the entire United States. The slate of this region is valued because it's harder than that from other areas, and it can be found in about a dozen different colors. Because of its importance to the local economy and because of the way the industry works, slate was given an exemption to the permitting requirements under Act 250, Vermont's land use and development law. The exemption allows quarries that are already registered to continue or pick up operations without needing to go back through Act 250 review. What that means in practice is that a quarry hole that's been dormant for decades, 30, 40, 50 years in some cases, can be brought back into operation without any review by the local community. And that's happening in a few places in that Slate Valley right now, and it's not going down well with all the neighbors. In our recent Act 250 show, we heard from a listener named Kay who wrote in part, "We couldn't wait to move here in January of 2018. Here we are not quite a year later and waging a battle we never could have expected. See, there's this exemption of Act 250 that applies to many slate quarries. It allows them to go back and request an area that had been previously quarried so long as some vague paperwork was filed back in 1994. Coming from out of state, we never would have known this. So now we have a company attempting to come in and quarry 150 feet from our property line in an area that hasn't been quarried in almost 50 years. Kay writes, "I'm shocked and disgusted that an environmental state like Vermont would allow this." So what does this mean, and how is it in place? How did it even happen this way? We're going to talk about that today, and we're joined by three guests. Diane Snelling is chair of the Vermont Natural Resources Board, which oversees Act 250 permitting. Hi, Diane. Nice to talk with you.
Hi, Jane. Great to be here.
Annette Smith is executive director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment, and she's been lobbying to try to amend or change some of the ways that these slate quarries are able to operate. Annette, it's nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me on, Jane.
And Richard Hill is president of Greenstone Slate Company in Pulteney. Richard, it's a pleasure to have you with us as well.
Thank you for having me.
So, Diane Snelling, let me start with you just to explain in really kind of basic terms what the exemption is for slate under Act 250. I mean, how it actually affects the slate industry and the towns.
Well, basically, if you had been quarrying slate as of 1970 and registered by, I think, January of 1995, you were not required to follow any regulations. So it is a straight-up exemption from that kind of regulation.
So basically, you know, if a town has put into place other zoning laws or different ways of operation, any slate quarry that was in operation as of 1970 and had filed this paperwork and registered by 1997 could have this exemption. So it could sort of lie dormant for a while and then pick up again, right? I mean, that's basically how it
works. Yes, and that is different from granite and marble and gravel, just FYI, in terms of things that are extracted and quarried.
Right. So in terms of the other things that are extracted in Vermont, slate really has a different kind of exemption. Do you know why?
Well, I did do some research and tried to talk with some legislators who might have been present at that time to understand what the conversation was. I can't say I really got a prevailing answer, so to speak. It was something that certainly people from the Rutland area were in favor of and felt would be very helpful in terms of jobs and industry. And I think that like the marble and granite industries in Vermont, longtime honor and pride in slate that sort of went with those jobs. And I think that it must have come from that.
So, Richard Hill, for you, can you give me an example of this? So, if you have a quarry hole that was in operation before 1970 and registered again before 1997, it doesn't have to conform to these town zoning or codes that have been put in place in recent decades. It doesn't have to go through a new Act 250 review, even if it hasn't been quarried in a while and then you start it up again. So, what kind of things specifically might be something a quarry can do or way it can operate that you couldn't if you were blasting a new hole?
Well, I think there's a lot of misinformation here. The quarries, we weren't exempted. We were phased in. We were businesses that had existed for 100 years or better. And but this question of what we were allowed to do, we went before the legislature, and I was part of that in the 96, 94, 96 era. And we presented to the legislature, we wanted, people were objecting to our activities, claiming they didn't know that they were going to happen. Well, of course, you don't know you're going to take stone out of the ground until you actually do it. And so we came up with this solution, is that we would file these registrations in the town clerk's office, and if people, particularly people from out of area, when they bought a piece of property, would find it in their title search, just like a mortgage or something that's been undischarged, and they would know that this is a quarry operation. These quarries are deposits, our future deposits. There are resources, and we can't work all of our resources at one time. There may be a lag in taking the stone out of the ground, but that's just the nature of the business. That's the nature of the business.
Okay, so that's how it works, and that's some good context for understanding why the slate industry wanted to be able to have these ways of operating. But before we go to Annette Smith, one of the things that I'm trying to understand is why and how this is either beneficial or useful to the quarry. So if you, and we'll talk a little bit in a few minutes about why a quarry hole might not be in operation for a couple of decades and then is again. So not to address that yet, but the kinds of things that you can do in these quarries that have already been permitted and fall under this exemption or this grandfathering that you can't do if you're making a new quarry hole. Like, what kinds of things can you do that you can't do in a new situation?
Well, we can't just go out into an empty field that there's been, no previous activity, mining activity there, and start a new quarry without an Act 250 permit. We have to get a permit like any other business. But this only applied to quarries that were previously operated. They were previously active. And even there in Act 250, if you read the statute, we're limited from doing certain things. We are slate quarries. We aren't crushed rock. There's a lot of things that we can't do, and the statute sets out those things that you do in a normal quarry a slate quarry operation, because a slate quarry is a very unique operation, and it's not like most extractive processes. For example, we can't crush stone, say, unless it's, they call it ancillary to the quarry operation itself. And the quarry operation basically is to take out stone for roofing and for floor tile and structural material, things like that. So this whole idea that we're somehow exempt, we aren't exempt. We have to follow the rules like everybody else. And I can't speak for everybody, but I know our company, we're very, very concerned about environmental issues.
Well, I mean, you are exempt. It's actually in the Act itself as exemptions to the Act. So, I mean, in terms of official language, it's an exemption. And I understand how the semantics can actually get political. So I understand what you're saying here. But the reason it's called an exemption is because that's what it's called in the legislation. And certainly that's what the Act 250 Commission has been looking at. But, listeners, I want to invite you into this conversation. You may have questions or some experience with this that you want to share, and we've been hearing from a lot of different people who have really varied and nuanced perspectives on this. And so if you'd like to add your own, you can call 800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or email vermontedition@vpr.net. One of the people we heard from is Josh, who says, I have moved to Vermont in the last year or so near what I was told was an inactive slate quarry, but a few months ago I was shocked to find out it was reopening after nearly 50 years of inactivity. After familiarizing myself with the Act 250 exemption, I was shocked that a quarry hole, as in many cases these so-called old quarries may have been a simple small hole in the ground that was hand-drawn on a piece of paper and submitted to Act 250, are exempt from nearly all regulation, either state or local. I don't have a problem with quarrying, but to exempt old pits that have been inactive for many decades, to me, is a problem. Now, Annette Smith, the argument is that these quarries were already in place in good faith before the zoning. They are maybe not operational now, but as the slate industry works, they may be operational again. So is the problem that neighbors and that people in the Slate Valley who have a problem with this are feeling that these things are not in operation, you sort of don't realize that they may be active again, and then they just start up again? Is that the problem?
There are many problems. That's part of it. One thing I want to make clear, though, is that these operations were not exempt from Agency of Natural Resources permits. We first got involved in this in 2014 when a resident of the area who has been watching what's been going on for decades reached out to me and said, let's take a ride. And I was quite surprised by what I saw. And then we worked with a water expert who did an investigation, and there are more than 400 holes registered, and this investigation involved going through all of those registrations and finding that, as Josh said, in some cases you'd be hard pressed to find evidence of a quarry operating before. Something very, very, very small can almost overnight turn into a huge open pit. And so because there are so many of these, and because the impacts of this operation is just the same as any other quarry operation, and there are considerable impacts that are now not regulated, it's a big problem.
Why? What's the problem?
Well, what we found in our investigation was that there were significant wetlands fillings. There were illegal discharges to the waters of the state, a lot of illegal dumping, which I know the slate quarry industry is concerned about anyway. We found toxic spills. There are no standard hours of operation. Now, these are things that Act 250 would regulate. They're excessively steep waste piles, any other waste that's piled. And in this case, upwards of 90% of what is actually brought out of the ground is waste. They have slopes that are quite shocking to me. We found no survey maps or land use plans required. There are no blasting plans required, no setbacks from roads or residential property. There was encroachment onto residential property. There are no reclamation plans, no money.
Let me stop you. When you talk about encroachment onto residential property, this is one of the issues that's come up. And Richard, I'll ask you to weigh in on this too. But like one of the things that I was talking about earlier with zoning laws, for example, that may have changed over time that these existing quarry holes are exempt from or don't have to follow would be a setback, for example. So somebody,
well,
a property
just
owner.
Not true. That's
but wait,
not
so
true.
So let me ask you about this. So if a quarry wants to quarry within 50 feet of a property line, is it able to do that, whereas a town might have made a new zoning law since then that says within 200 feet?
Well, I think Richard is trying to chime in and say that that's not true, that there is local zoning in some places that do regulate this. However, if you actually look at what's happening on the ground, as we did, we found that there were waste piles piled right up to people's borders, regardless of whether there was zoning in the town or not.
But Annette, that's not the property owner's property. So, you know, what basis would they think that they have a right to say that the other property owner can't pile a waste pile right up to the edge?
Well, we gave our presentation to the House Fish, Wildlife, and Water Resources Committee, the one that was chaired by Representative David Dean back in April of 2015. And one person who spoke is someone who has litigated over this, and she brought in pictures and talked about things like huge tires getting thrown over this berm, this pile that was getting closer and closer to her house, blasting that was throwing rocks onto her property, really scary things if you want to use your own property. So while the slate industry has rights, so do the neighbors.
So Richard Hill, you were saying that's not true, that's not true. I want to get your perspective on this.
Well, for example, I've been very involved in the zoning in Pulteney, and there's setback laws. There's setback laws. There's regulations. This idea that we're just a wild west of blasting is not true.
Mm-hmm.
Blasting is less common than it's ever been. We seismograph our blasts. We do everything we possibly can to help our neighbors and to keep them informed of what we're doing. If it's something that needs to be talked about. But
can I just add, Gene, that one of the things that regulation does is it means that good behavior is the standard. In other words, people, it sounds like, Richard, like you've done things well and care about your neighbors and try to act in an appropriate manner. But there may be others who don't feel that way. And regulation is what evens that out and says we all have to behave in this way to be good neighbors and to have this valuable product at the same time.
But we do have, we do have regulations. You know, if there has been only a couple that I am aware of incidences where, say, there was some injury to other people's property, and those have been taken care of by our laws, and so I don't.
Well, the thing about Act 250 is it does give neighbors an opportunity to have a voice about what's going on next door, and I think that's what some of the people who have been speaking out recently are talking about, is that they had no way to enter into the conversation.
That's Diane Snelling. We're also talking with Annette Smith and Richard Hill, and we're talking about this fairly complex but really interesting conversation and topic issue that's happening in the Slate Valley in Vermont now, and you know, has been an ongoing conversation in many cases for many years. But we're looking at how the slate industry works, how the slate is regulated under Act 250, and how the way that it has either grandfathered in or an exemption is affecting the way communities are feeling about how it's operated. One of the other things I want to talk about when we come back is what's happening in the slate industry, excuse me, that's actually making for some quarry holes to be reopened. How does that actually work for people who are less aware of how the slate quarrying works? That's an interesting part of it. And what might happen now? We know that the Act 250 Commission has been looking at what might change for the next 50 years of Act 250. I spoke with Representative Amy Sheldon by email this morning. She said they haven't made official recommendations on slate yet. That is likely something that will come up in the next legislative session. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Today we're talking about the modern slate industry in Vermont. We're learning a little bit about how it works and what motivates more quarrying. We're also getting a better understanding of why the Act 250 exemption that the slate industry has is causing some anger for some neighbors who live near quarries, especially ones that haven't been in operation for many years that are in some cases back in business. We are talking with Diane Snelling, chair of the Vermont Natural Resources Board, Annette Smith, executive director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment, and Richard Hill, president of Greenstone Slate Company in Pulteney.
So, Jane, I just want to add, this is Diane, that, you know, gravel pits have some of the similar aspects to the slate quarries in that the people have moved in closer to gravel pits that were not in operation, and then they start again. So it's not just the slate industry. I just wanted to point that out, although gravel pits are regulated by Act 250.
Let me read another email that we got. This is from Michael in Tynmouth, who says, as a traditional stone carver, my business depends on the availability of Vermont slate. Historically, you see the settlement of the workers in all of our stone industries in proximity to the source of their material. They were aware of the impact of what they did and planned accordingly. Now, with the mobility of our modern society, our rural areas are a mixture of people, with different interests which sometimes conflict with traditional use. I would hope that the new paradigm would not encourage housing anywhere near the quarries, give respect to those who, through no fault of their own, find themselves in the way of expansion, plus some state-funded subsidy to compensate the worst-case scenarios. The latter may seem odd at first, but consider all of the state money currently used to entice new business into the region. A fraction of that could help preserve our existing industry, which has already suffered greatly from globalization. And Lou in Wells says, shortly after Vermont passed Act 250, New York passed a mined land reclamation law in 1975. It sets up good mining practices for any kind of surface mining. It requires a survey and a mining and reclamation plan. It establishes hours and methods of blasting, requires setbacks for piling waste material from boundaries and wetlands. Even the gradient of rubble piles is part of land reclamation. I'm told that similar practices are required to comply with Act 250. The slate quarry exemption virtually eliminates all of these requirements, and I'd like to hear someone justify why strip mining slate can be exempted, but granite, gravel, or other materials are not. Diane Snelling, you look at Act 250 as your role as chair of the Vermont Natural Resources Board, and this is going to be coming up in the next legislative session. Do you see some changes coming? We've heard two comments there from people who have suggestions or would like to see some changes. What do you see coming?
Well, I see that the review of the Commission on Act 250 from Act 47 is very, very broad. They've heard testimony now for almost 18 months. They're looking at all kinds of things. So I know they have a lot to consider. I don't know where this fits in their priorities, but it is something that's, I think about, you know, it's 23 years later from 1997 when this decision was made for the by the legislature, and maybe it is time to sort of say, is this the right way to do this?
Richard Hill, do you see changes coming, and are there things that you could live with or things that you'll fight?
Well, there's things that we can live with, and the most important thing is we have to be concerned about our neighbors. There's just no question about it. And that applies to slate quarries or almost any business. We know we do live in a different world. However, there has always been, if you go back through the records, there's always been a certain group of people who do not like extractive industries. And that's been the case in the slate business for over 100 years. And a lot of people have some ideas about reclamation and so forth. There's a real broad divergence of opinions. It's my understanding, and I'm not talking as for these people, but I know the federal government, they're not really, they don't like reclamation. They don't think that it's a good idea for environmental reasons, whereas the state takes a little bit of a different view. It's in the details that these things become a problem. But things are improving. The quarries are getting safer. They're getting quieter. And I think that, and I can't speak for all of the slate owners or for the slate association, but I can tell you we're very concerned about our neighbors.
Richard, can I just ask you why a quarry hole might be dormant for 30, 40, 50 years and then start up in operation again? I mean, how the industry works that might happen?
Well, the deposits are very small, and yet it takes a long time to work them. The industry has gone up and down with the tides of fortune over the last 150 years. So you need a particular color, and you go to that quarry, take out that color, and you may not need it again for 4 or 5 or 10 years. We have some stone in our inventory that's probably 10 years old, and so most of it is because of the geology. And the other thing, too, is, like I said, slate quarries are very, very they're very unique. They only lie in a very small geological area. And this is why we worked with the legislature in 96 to get into this registration thing so that people know that that they're on the slate vein, because we do have the biggest slate vein in the United States.
And let me stop you there just because we're short on time, and I want to ask Annette Smith another question here, which is, you know, this has become a problem for some neighbors who say, especially we heard from Kay earlier, who said, I didn't know this. I moved here. I didn't realize that this could even happen. Whose responsibility is it to be telling landowners and neighbors and, you know, communities what the regulations are and the rules are so that everybody's aware of what's happening? And then, you know, you can still decide whether to fight that in the legislature. But, you know, why aren't people aware of this, do you think?
Well, in the first instance, we have strong real estate disclosure laws, but we've had in this year two families that have moved to Vermont. We want to encourage young families and young workers, and one is in Pulteney and one is in West Paulet. The Pulteney people found themselves in the situation where their foundation was damaged. They hired a lawyer. They've had to abandon their home. Their water supply was damaged. So who is responsible? I mean, that's part of the problem right now. And Act 250 is not a panacea for the neighbors, and it's not the onerous thing that the industry is claiming. What it does is it is very good at notification. It will set standards, blasting. It'll set hours of operation, which every other extractive industry in Vermont has to comply with. So it is reasonable to implement Act 250 for extractive industries. And this is not saying that people are against it. People are still going to be living next to extractive industries, and the operations are going to be able to continue. But in terms of who's responsible for notifying people that their neighbor's property has something in their deed, right now it is a real problem that needs to be addressed. I mean, sometimes we look at things and say, what's the problem? But right now, we have a problem.
Well, as you said, this is an issue that's ongoing, and I appreciate, I know all three of you have more to say, and luckily for us, this is a topic that will be coming up again. We know that it's something likely to be talked about in the legislature, and I appreciate all three of you giving us some context and some information to go on as we look at what's happening with Slate, we look at what's happening in the Slate Valley, and we look at Act 250. Annette Smith is Executive Director of Vermonters for a Clean Environment. Richard Hill is President of Greenstone Slate Company in Pulteney. And Diane Snelling is Chair of the Vermont Natural Resources Board. Thanks to all three of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.